Welcome to the Payment Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack, and on today's episode, we're going to be talking about point-to-point encryption and PCI compliance. And to help me with that conversation, I have Rustin Miles, who is the Chief Strategy Officer, EVP, and founder of Bluefin Payment Systems. Now, during this episode, Rustin does a fantastic job of going into detail about the subject matter. So without any further delay, let's dive right into the episode. So, Rustin, welcome to the podcast.
Good morning. Thanks, Ryan.
Excellent. So to quickly jump in here and to kind of get to the point, I'd really like to get your take on really what is the difference between PCI certified and non-certified encryption?
Sure. Great question. And I get that one a lot. And for purposes of my definition here, folks might hear a PCI certified. They may hear PCI approved. And they may hear PCI validated point-to-point encryption. These are all referring to the same things. This has to do with the fact that the PCI Security Standards Council has done what they do is create standards. They are a security standards body. And they've created a standard for encryption, for particularly device-based encryption. And that standard has been around for quite a few years now. And so what this certified encryption is really encryption that has met or exceeded the level of protection and all the different points could be more than 1,000 requirements by the time you add in the required baseline DSS. That's the underlying environment it's going to be in, and then all the controls that have to do with the encryption itself. Well, there are over 1,000 requirements. So these are the ones that have met that standard for encryption. So, but what are some of the differences? So when we look at anything that's non-certified, it's basically meaning that no one has looked at it. There's no independent third party, no auditor, no assessor, no other company that has reviewed, hey, does this encryption product meet some sort of minimum viable product or baseline of standards that thereby when a company is considering looking at that encryption product, they can have some level of confidence to know that the vendor claims and the salesperson gymnastics that are surrounding the marketing of that encryption product are actually something that they can rely on, they can believe. This then gives them criteria against which to compare against other encryption products in the market. Now, some folks just look at a big name of a processor or a provider and say, okay, well, they're big enough, I can trust what they provide. Question to ask themselves is, well, why hasn't then that vendor gone through and gotten that product audited if it's all that great? Oftentimes, I can tell you they have tried and the products have fallen short. But there are some key differences as to the value proposition that come out of that. But I guess maybe I'll get just a little bit of tech and then we'll talk a little bit of value proposition. A little bit of tech differences, if you will, between certified and uncertified. The ones that we constantly see out there in the marketplace are, number one, that the devices, the credit card terminal or machine that's accepting the transaction, most of the time do not have a technology called SRED or secure reading and exchange of data. And they do not have tamper awareness with sort of a lifetime battery. And these are really important. What this means is when you unplug the device from power, it stays alive. It still stays self-aware for a lifetime, right? So you can imagine you unplug this device, you put it in the back closet of your business, and it sits there for 6 years. Somebody at that time steals it, goes away, tries to break it open and put some software, hardware in it and sneak it back into your closet or put it back onto your countertop and somehow start to compromise data. Well, if this is part of the P2PE program with PCI, that device will have recognized that even though it had no power provided to it externally, will have erased its keys. And the next time it's plugged in, we'll go ahead and phone home, say, hey, we need to quarantine myself and notify all those involved that there's been some sort of security compromise on the device. So this is really important, sort of holistic things that even go outside of the encryption. A lot of the requirements, in fact, with PCI's program actually do go outside of the encryption. Encryption is sort of the easiest part of a point-to-point encryption program because, you know, it's the math and it's et cetera that goes around surrounds that, and that's all sort of well known. Really, what's the more important part is the protection of the keys and the protection of the device. So if you had the world's strongest safe with the thickest walls and the hardest, you know, combination or lock to crack open. But you had the key sitting on a chair right next to it. It didn't matter how strong that safe is. The bad guy would just take the key and open the safe. It's the same thing with point-to-point encryption. It doesn't matter how great your encryption is. If the keys are compromised, then the bad guys can just unlock anything that you've encrypted. And we've seen that, not going to call anyone else, but here, you know, in the latter part of 2018, we have seen that. Even going back on into here, you know, last year in 17, some of the major breaches that actually did employ encryption, but it wasn't PCI certified encryption, and the bad guys were able to get to the keys. Or in some cases, certain parts of the program were there where the bad guys were able to get into the devices and the hardware and just change the settings or unconfigure the encryption settings that were in there. So that's really some of the technical differences. When we go over to the value proposition differences, I think one of the main things why we've seen literally, hundreds and thousands of merchants getting in into this PCI certified or making it an absolute requirement of their RFP, the request for proposals that they have. We see that all the time where it says, is it validated? If it's not validated, when will it be validated? You know, any of the people who respond to this RFP must be certified, et cetera. One of the main reasons is that for twofold. Number one, in this era of, I would say the twofold is compliance, right? And then also simplification of their programs and security. So I'd say from a compliance perspective, what we see is that if you're, a merchant that is doing a report on compliance, what we call a ROC from the PCI or SAC, which is the self-assessment questionnaire, you can take as many as 300 of the security controls, or also known as requirements, out of the equation, really, as many as, if you implement this kind of technology. So that's a 90% reduction of the moving parts of your compliance program, which massively simplifies your program, allows you to focus on, other parts of the program and make it much more manageable. And of course, anytime that happens, it's going to make it less costly in terms of human costs, and also, real costs for things like this. So really is a massive night and day difference, up to 90% reduction. So that's really driving a lot of the demand. But then also from the security side, folks are wanting to implement encryption that they can count on. If you look back over the last couple of years, as I said, there have been breaches and compromises where encryption was in place, but it wasn't PCI certified. And so that is driving a lot of merchants to say, gosh, we got to have some sort of confidence in the technology that is supposed to be securing us.
Excellent. Thank you for that. Yeah, no, anytime that we talk about security or encryption, my mind always goes to just kind of that common phrase of a chain is only as strong as its weakest link there. And I think you put out some really great points to there. Now, if I could, I'd like to go to a certain section of the what you were talking about there and kind of the point-to-point encryption. And if you could you kind of break down a little bit more for us on how the point-to-point encryption fits into various industries?
Sure. And I want to be clear, for the audience here, that point-to-point encryption is just PCI's, the Security Standards Council. It's their name for what they call their version of certified end-to-end encryption. Some folks get point-to-point encryption, especially in the technical and the networking community, get it confused with like peer-to-peer encryption or some sorts of encryption that have to do with the tunnels, et cetera, point-to-point tunneling protocols, et cetera, between two different, routers and firewalls and all these kinds of things. And that's not really what this is. What this is a standard. Point-to-point encryption is PCI's standard of what they call for, their certified end-to-end encryption. So really, end-to-end encryption has been here for quite some time. When I founded Bluefin back in 2002, gosh, it wasn't only a couple of years before we were actually implementing end-to-end encryption in various industries. So it has been around for a real long time. What has not been around for a real long time is any sort of standard surrounding that. How should you do it? What are the best practices? What are the requirements? What things should you not do? Should keys live in databases, or should keys only live in HSMs and hardware modules where bad guys can't get into them? And so really it's been around for a while and it's been used in lots of industries. But it really fits into every industry that you can think of. The only industry, the only channel that it's really not as relevant for it has been e-commerce, because one of the things that end-to-end encryption or PCI's point-to-point encryption really presupposes is that the merchant themselves, the retailer, it's their device. They're the owners of the device that the transactions are being keyed, swiped, dipped, or typed into, et cetera, or tapped into, I mean. So that means, you know, of course, with e-commerce, or as they call it, remote commerce, it's the consumer's own keyboard at home that is entering the card data. So, you know, point-to-point encryption at this time is not relevant for that particular channel. But all other channels, meaning then any other retail, including NFC for tap or contactless, all these different ways, this point-to-point encryption exists and is in use. So, but how does it fit? I think I'd say, you know, there are obvious use cases when we look at a retailer and understand that, gosh, when that card is slid through the magnetic stripe reader there, that there is encryption going on in that magnetic head. If it's an EMV chip card right there at the ICCR, the integrated chip card reader, where it's touching in there, it's being encrypted in hardware right there. And some folks might say, well, why do we need encryption for EMV? Might be surprised to know, but if we pulled out an EMV reader right here and we dipped a card into it, and I showed you scoped what came out of the other end of the wire that goes into the workstation or over your network, it's not encrypted, and the full 16-digit card number is in clear text for you to see. That surprises a lot of folks because they think that somehow the chip is supposed to be encrypting something there, but in fact, that's not why the chip is there. The chip is there to say that plastic card is not counterfeit. That's all it does. So very much encryption is important, point-to-point encryption is important in conjunction with EMV to provide data security on the EMV data that's passing through. When we go over into tap, which we see, you know, a lot maybe in transit, especially, you know, I was over in London speaking at the PCI Security Standards Council community meeting there, a couple months ago. And, there's a lot of tap going on through the turnstiles for transport for London and other folks, places like this. So that's certainly it. So all the different industries, you know, can come across that. But I'd say the one that is interesting, I'd say, and new, represents green field, if you will, for a lot of the folks, any of your listeners who are in the industry of selling payment products, is card not present. And folks often say, oh, well, point-to-point encryption doesn't handle card not present, Rustin. You just said, you know, the keyboard and whatnot can't be protected. But if it's a merchant-owned environment, let's say a contact center, a call center, a back office where someone's keying in data to through a PC workstation or laptop or Apple or whatever into some sort of application, gosh, there can be all sorts of bad things like key loggers, malware, RAM scrapers, shared memory attacks, all sorts of things that can happen to grab the data as you're keying in this card data into these applications that these businesses use. Well, what's really sort of come on over the last 4 or 5 years, and believe me, we're placing thousands and thousands of these every month, are encrypted keypads. So it's a USB keypad, right, where it looks like an accountant's 10 key, something you might buy at, Office Depot or Office Max or somewhere. But however, when you're keying it into that, it's encrypting the data, and then wherever your cursor is, instead of putting the card number, it puts, you know, ABC123, or what we in the business call ciphertext. So in this way, point-to-point encryption can be used at call centers and back offices in order to even protect card-not-present environments like that from this. So we see that as definitely a growing area. And in fact, we see very large organizations sometimes implementing that first because it may be more costly to replace devices that are already in the field and being used and the impact to operations. And so they'll go and sort of fix the back office and the contact center. And believe me, some of these folks have thousands of contact center agents, you know, working phones or working the mail. And so that's certainly an area where it might not be readily understood. And then finally, what we're seeing is, you know, for example, for airlines, right, there are certain ways that folks use cards that have nothing to do with payments. So maybe you're sliding your card in order to check in so it provides some sort of identity. Well, that needs to be encrypted too, right? So what we're seeing is anytime a card is touched or the information on a card is used by a business, there is a use case, and also there is and exists today an answer for with encryption, and specifically this point-to-point encryption.
Great. No, I certainly think it's extremely interesting there. And I kind of always just, especially when we're talking about security or anything, my mind always goes to kind of like, okay, how would a fraudster think about this and kind of how would they attack this and everything? And so kind of my next question really kind of takes a look at, you know, the P2P encryption. You know, is it that the mindset of fraudsters particular kind of being that, hey, I'm lazy, so I want the biggest bang for my buck, so I'm going to go after large institutions here. But, you know, maybe as you kind of said, those larger institutions have kind of implemented more of these security measures because they have the resources to be able to do it. But so why in particular then, if fraudsters are thinking maybe in sense of volume, so I'll go after the larger players, why would it then be particularly important for small businesses to adopt the P2P encryption?
Sure. Great question, and I'm going to answer it two parts here. And right now, we only think as an industry, right? And you're absolutely right. If you look at the statistics, as an industry in a payments industry, we only think that the bad guys care about and are going after the large businesses. But actually, those are the only ones that we know about. Remember, the hackers don't come and check in and say, "Hey guys, we're going after only this." We only find that out because it's those big giant breaches that make the news that can be found, because a lot of bad things happen all at once, right? And in fact, hackers are in the business of getting caught. So anytime we see someone, oh, wow, you know, so-and-so company, a huge company was just breached, you know, that means a hacker did something wrong, because the attack vector and the whole approach to hacking, if you will, and breaches has changed over the last decade. It used to be they wanted to go crack into some big business, get a giant database of cards. Now, that just happened recently with a large hotelier, but that kind of thing is not, you know, the 1,600, 1,700 breaches that happened last year were not all these companies losing giant databases of cards. What's been happening since the very first Target breach, if you go back to 2013, really has been this whole move towards malware. And what that means is they get this malware into systems by using a variety of things like spear phishing, phishing, and other sorts of hacks. But they get this malware in there, and it silently sits there and listens transaction by transaction by transaction, getting this data and then sending it out of the system. So that's the way that the hackers have been doing all these breaches, you know, these thousands of breaches every year. And so what happens there is finally somehow enough of that gets put into a pile somewhere that they finally get caught. But what's really happening on top of that, that's really the tip of the iceberg. So when you look at statistics, you got to look at the, you know, what are we, where's our sample? Where's our group that we're basing these statistics on? And small merchants are often left out of those discussions because they go unreported and widely just unknown. You know, if a hacker gets malware into a small business and they're able to steal 100 cards this month, who's going to know about that? You know, the small merchant doesn't have a, you know, security professional monitoring their network to say, gosh, I found data exfiltrating the system. They're not big enough where any large bank or card brand will say, we found a common point of purchase here where, you know, where all these millions of cards have been going on to the dark web, and these are all have been cross-referenced, and we figure out it's ABC large corporation or retailer. That's not going to happen for a small merchant. And so that's why these hackers do, in fact, like small merchants. And what they do is they don't typically go in and just sort of target a single small merchant. To your point, you know, they take the lazy but highly effective approach to hack the application that a small business might be using, and then find out, okay, give me the 10,000 small merchants out there that are using XYZ version of this particular application because they haven't updated to the new security patches or whatever it is, and then we'll automate a hack that goes out there, gets into the system, and then they wake up in the morning, you know, they're sitting there eating their cereal, the hacker is, and okay, here's all the different credit cards that have come in from all these businesses all over the world, and then they go and sell them on the dark web. So the threat really is real there. And so I think it's important now getting small businesses to take that seriously and understand that is a risk. Oftentimes your small business thinks that the greatest risk that they have is going out of business, right? For not selling enough hot dogs and hamburgers. They don't might not feel that their largest risk is a breach, okay? And their brand might not be, you know, on a world presence where a breach they might feel would impact them or that anybody would know or not come by and buy another sandwich from them. So the threat is real, but the perceived threat might not be as much. But I want to go over and talk about it from a compliance perspective, because this is where I put together along with Dan Fritchie from Coalfire, put together a panel in both U.S. and in Europe at the PCI community meetings. And one of the things that we did talk about was small business compliance. When we look at the PCI security standards, right, there's 335 of them that businesses have to manage 365 days a year. And so we know that these small businesses are not security professionals. So they might not even be qualified to answer some of these questions. And they certainly, if they do, may answer them wrong or not answer them at all. However, they bear the compliance burden. With point-to-point encryption, right, all of those, 300 of those requirements go out of the window for them and for their small environment, I need to be clear how I say that, as many as 300 cannot be relevant for their environments if they use point-to-point encryption. So what this does is it simplifies their compliance program to a level that they can actually access it, attain it, and be compliant. And so we're seeing a lot of processors start to think this way, to say, look, there's the do-it-yourself approach. There's the, hey, go figure out, Home Depot it, go figure out how to build your own thing. Or there's the don't do-it-yourself approach. And there's the, hey, buy this product or solution, a small merchant. And if you buy this, then you don't have to do that. And we have seen some providers starting to say, you know what, we're not even going to let small merchants make that decision. We're just going to require them that they have to use a certified, validated version of our solution if they want to be in compliance at all. Because what small merchant is going to get it right? Even if a small merchant, a very small one, does buy that firewall and configure it correctly on day one, what about day 3,000, 9 or 10 years into the situation, or even a year? What about day 300? Are they really keeping up with everything that they need to do to secure all of the particular parts of their environment? So to wrap it up, the whole do-it-yourself approach for small businesses, we're learning, of course, over the last decade, it's not working out for them. And so we're starting to see folks just say, look, don't do it yourself, buy a solution that takes care of this for you.
Great. Now I think certainly a surprise to no one here is that, there are major differences between the payment security implementation, or not implementations, but just kind of rules, regulations, and the way that the U.S. and Europe essentially kind of view security just in general here. So I was wondering if you could kind of take a deeper dive into what some of those differences are between the U.S. and Europe.
Sure. And, we all heard about GDPR one way or the other, right? And this is a privacy regulation. And, but of course, anything that deals with privacy is going to deal with, should necessarily impact, be impacted by security, because, the lack of security creates a privacy issue when that data is compromised. So it's going to have an overall effect. And I feel the effect is going to be to move forward technologies, of course. I'm a big evangelist for this, but technologies like encryption and point-to-point encryption, because there's two approaches to security. You can defend the data. That's sort of the 335 security controls, where you're trying to do all these things to play cat and mouse and keep the bad guys out. And then when they get in, and you lose and they win. Or there's that's the defend the data approach. Or there's the devalue the data approach that says, look, let's go ahead and encrypt or tokenize or both all this data, that thereby, if the hacker does get in, while the breach may have happened, they can't compromise the data. Big difference, key difference. Breach happens, but data compromise doesn't happen. Major difference, especially as it pertains to privacy regulations, right? Like GDPR and these other things. Because what we're saying here is no, there was no privacy breach here, privacy compromise. So big difference and big impact. So we're seeing that stuff happening in Europe. Europe actually was ahead of North America in terms of point-to-point encryption. Back in 2014, Bluefin was the first certified provider in North America, but there were three others prior to us across Europe. One of the things I really like that's going on in Europe, and has for the last few years, that's really helped us with our business development efforts, is that Visa actually requires for any MPOS, mobile point-of-sale device, any new implementations, that they have to be PCI certified. They're required to be. And so that's a big difference, right? There's no option there, big or small, if you're going to offer this. And we all know that that's where the market is going. Retailers everywhere, all over the world, are moving and extending their reach to merchants with line busting or just even putting mobile point of sale devices at the checkout. But you know, all these different ways. You know, think about in airplanes and think about car rental situations where folks go out to your car. So this is an important new growth, and they're saying has to be, because it's virtually impossible or very difficult to secure and keep up with security on MPOS environments. So I do like that requirement for certain areas of risk. You know, would hope to see something like that here in the U.S. at some point. Those are some of the differences in payment security. I'd say that they're ahead of us in terms, of course, as we all know, with the EMV chip for card counterfeit card prevention. We all know that they were there, you know, several years before the liability shift happened over here. And also in Europe, it wasn't a liability shift; it was a mandate. They had to implement that. So what that also did was meant that all those new devices that accepted cards had to be upgraded, and they were all upgraded to newer versions, which did support point-to-point encryption. These providers didn't have to go out and buy new devices in order to enable the point-to-point encryption. Same thing has happened here. The liability shift has caused many merchants to upgrade their credit card devices that they receive credit cards on. And, you know, largely many of those, maybe most of those, are capable of performing this point-to-point encryption. In many cases, the merchant just doesn't know to turn it on. And I think that's where education, awareness, and business development comes in play.
Excellent. No, and I'm glad that you brought up the word education there. And so to kind of, before we wrap things up here, when you take a look at payment security kind of in the next 5 to 10 years, what do you think is next? And do you think that like education is going to play an extremely important role in that?
So, you know, as I pointed out a couple of times, I've just come back from the council meetings. So we are not going to see a major revision change this year to point-to-point encryption. And even the changes that will be coming in the year, the coming years, are not going to be changes to the technology. It's going to be changes to the program to make to streamline and make the program even more easier to access. But the technology is, you know, sort of state-of-the-art security. So the problem we have right now is not trying to find better way to secure it. It's actually getting the technology point-to-point encryption to be used more by merchants. And so that awareness, education, maybe compliance, program reductions, different ways, different benefits and carrots in order to have merchants participate in that. And, you know, at some point, I would imagine there will be some sticks, right, driving merchants. I think the next big thing in security will be how can we put a program around contactless. You know, everybody's got a lot of chip cards. I'm sure everyone's sitting on at least one or maybe two or having them in their purse right now. So I think that what we're going to see is, you know, a lot of the cards that we have right now with chips do not have the contactless feature in the card. And we are going to see major banks start issuing, probably in 19 for sure, definitely on into 20, cards that have those. And this merchants are going to be enabling the contactless feature. And how do we secure that? The council is going to be coming out with standards around contactless, a security standard surrounding that. So that, I think, is where we'll see the next big shift. Now, as I said, point-to-point encryption already can assist with contactless by, there's an NFC, a near-field communication radio inside of these devices that receives that tap when you tap the card against it, and that can already be encrypted today. So what we're going to start seeing, though, is standards around contactless as that becomes the preferred mode of interaction. And of course, we'll speed up, that card data interaction between merchants and consumers.
Excellent. No, and that just kind of brings up then one more question. I know that you're talking about contactless there. And I know particularly in the U.S., mobile payments has been a little bit sluggish in adoption, but it is slowly starting to pick up here. But what about mobile and point-to-point encryption?
Yeah, so in Europe, it's already a requirement, right, for MPOS. When we say MPOS, the distinction there is that this is a merchant's device that they're holding that is receiving, the payment in some way. You know, when we talk about Apple Pay and these other things, that's a consumer-held device, okay? So, but we're going to start to see that. So point-to-point encryption already provides benefit around that, but some merchants right now, point-to-point encryption is not a requirement, right? It's definitely something that we see merchants using in order to remove 300 of the requirements, right? But it's not, you must do this only for MPONs, and only in Europe is it an absolute requirement that you must do it. So the contactless standard will come out and will delineate, here are the things that you have to do then in the US if you don't use point-to-point encryption, and which I think provides yet another carrot for folks to say, gosh, you know, well, we don't want to have to do all those things, so let's go ahead and just encrypt this stuff, which is what we should have done in the first place. That's my prediction, but the standard has not come along yet, and it's something that I know my company, Bluefin, we are what's called a participating organization with the PCI Council, and so we are involved along with, you know, many, many, many other companies, hundreds of other companies, in creating, editing versions of, and providing input on these standards for, you know, showing, hey, this is what's happening on the front lines for us. Here's what would make this easier. Here's what would make this more secure. So providing that input is something that I'd encourage any of your listeners to participate in.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Russin, for taking the time today for speaking to us about point-to-point encryption, and we hope to have you back on the podcast real soon.
Thanks a lot, Ryan.